Like we're ready for case number 5, which is United States against Harry Miller, 183114. And we have Mr. Bugney and Mr. Wang. And so, Mr. Bugney, you may begin.
May it please the court. Under Brady, the defendant is entitled to any favorable evidence. The government has to turn it over if it has it. Here, Detective Roloff knew about the second undercover operation that he had launched. The fruits of that operation, including the 7 hours of recordings, the 8 visits while there would have been human trafficking going on at the apartment building, as well as the emails and the failed phone tap, and not to mention the surveillance video. All of that was known to the government at the time of trial, and none of it was turned over. The question here is whether or not that evidence was favorable, and it showed it not only reinforced the defense's theory that if some of this stuff would have happened, somebody would have seen it, and here we would have had 4 law enforcement officers there to say to testify that they didn't see anything.
Are we sure they would have seen it? I mean, go ahead, Judge Barrett.
You can go, Judge Wood.
What I was struck by reading this is that looking at your account, it sounds as though people were there all the time, and maybe you would have noticed people coming and going, but looking then at the rest of the record, it seems that they were there sometimes for certain periods of time, but I'm not sure so much that the inevitability of spotting this unusual behavior that you suggest comes out to me. And of course, as you know, the district court thought that when all was said and done, there was no prejudice in the failure to turn these materials over, even if, putting that to one side, even if it had been a Brady problem.
So we know that the investigators are there in 8 days.
But how many hours? I mean, for an hour or 90 minutes at one point, people did come and go.
There's no question, but we don't know that it was only 90 minutes. That's part of why we asked for the evidentiary hearing. We never had a chance to cross-examine and figure out how long the detectives were there, how long the undercovers were there. The district court guessed at 90 minutes, said the longest someone was there was 90 minutes. Well, we have 7.5 hours of recordings. It's impossible to get the 7.5 hours if these are really just brief interactions or they're not there that long. The other question is, why are they there at all if not to investigate this and to find it? Why go through all the effort and the expense? It's 4 agents. They're renting a place. They're going through all these steps. They're going there to find evidence of human trafficking. So the fact that there's
separate, I have a factual question about that. I thought that was a separate investigation that, quote, didn't pan out, maybe of drug operations.
Well, sorry, Your Honor, that's what they represented to us in the email. But all of the reports went to Roloff, and Roloff was at that point investigating human trafficking. So he's the one who signs the property receipt. He's also the one that the reports go to when they collect the surveillance. The last note, I think it's on June 21st. Is dropped off everything to Roloff. So it's Detective Roloff who's investigating human trafficking is launching this undercover operation. He's the one who assigned the roles. He's the one who decided, you know, when they would go there. He's the one who initiated the phone tap. So it's not a separate investigation. That's what we were told. And that's why we didn't pursue it before trial. It's the same investigation. It's just different investigatory tools. They were looking for human trafficking.
But counsel, and your entire theory, and this kind of overlaps with Judge Wood's point, your entire theory about why this is favorable is kind of the dog that didn't bark theory, right? That they showed up maybe 7 or 8 times, only approached his studio once, and didn't observe anything, didn't observe any human trafficking to speak of. And you think that was so favorable that it would have made, sorry, not even to speak of, didn't observe any. But your theory is that that was so favorable that it would have moved the jury to come to a different result, or there's a reasonable probability that it would have?
Exactly. This was not a strong case for the government. This was a weak case. And as the weaker the case, the smaller the amount of evidence that we need to say there's a reasonable probability. But here, this is actually very strong evidence. This is exactly the type of evidence that Walter, that the defense used. And it's not just that they were there 8 times. It's that you went and collected the surveillance video, and the surveillance video inside the apartment didn't show anything. That's not an insignificant amount of evidence, nor is it the fact that you talked to Miller for 7.5 hours and never once does he say, hey, would you like a prostitute? you know, I have these girls, I'm running these girls. All of that goes to these law enforcement contacts that we would have been able to not just present to the jury, but to say, where is the evidence that they were seeking? It's because the stories that you've been told by the two women didn't actually happen, nor did Schumacher or Remezoski's testimony. Was it reliable? Every witness here was impeached. This was not a case where there was overwhelming evidence or that there was any physical evidence, any evidence that actually tied Miller to this. And as you depart from that kind of trajectory where you can say this is a reliable, very thorough investigation, and you go to impeached, unreliable witnesses, this evidence really does strike at it.
I thought there was evidence tying his number to the Backpage postings.
Sorry, Your Honor, you broke up.
I thought it wasn't all testimonial. And we'll put aside, yes, they were impeached, but we'll put aside, clearly the jury didn't think that the impeachment was so strong to render their testimony completely worthless, right? Because it convicted. But I thought it wasn't just testimonial evidence. I thought there was some evidence tying Miller to the Backpage ads.
Not that Miller was, that was through testimony of Breitsky.
I thought there was a paralegal from Backpage who testified.
The paralegal said that the cell phone, so they used a, what was called a Wi-Fi phone, you know, that you can connect to Wi-Fi, and that Breitsky had used that. In fact, the two, and she posted using that phone. She said that she didn't have a phone for various periods of time. So that's where that testimony comes in. But it's also when they call, I'm saying they, the undercovers, call Miller, Breitsky actually answers twice. So it's, she's using this phone. She's allowed to use that phone. She's actually a guest there. This is a flop house, a flop apartment, an efficiency. We never contested that she didn't stay there. So the fact that she had access to the phone and the fact that the phone was posted Backpage ads doesn't mean that Miller actually used force or coercion. That's the key to it. Because it's not that these women were engaging in prostitution. That we've always accepted and we've understood. And that happened. It's whether or not Miller was the one who forced them. And for that, their testimony has to be reliable. And part of their testimony is this whole mosaic that they painted of Miller standing there with a bat, Miller controlling them, Miller having collecting the money, Miller doing everything, driving everybody out of the apartment so they could do that. Well, that's
you,
what they
you
would
were
observe.
Able to bring out, though, quite a bit of impeachment testimony at this trial. For example, you know, people going off on vacations and going away for some period of time and coming back, which I certain you must have argued indicated a lack of coercion, that they, whatever they were doing of their own free will. But the jury didn't buy it.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, the jury didn't buy it after being out longer than it took to present the case. You know, the fact that the jury ultimately convicted doesn't mean that there's not a reasonable probability if we return
of
a different verdict.
Point. I understand. Did you want to save rebuttal?
I would, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Why don't we do that now? So you'll have a little more than 2 minutes. Mr. Wang.
May it please the court, Christopher Wang on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, this is a simple and straightforward case. Miller's failure to satisfy any of the three Brady factors is fatal to his claim. And in fact, he failed to satisfy all three. First, with regard to materiality, the governance of materiality argument is strong, and this court confirmed the district court on this factor alone. Both victims gave detailed and uncontroverted testimony that Miller physically and psychologically forced or coerced them to engage in commercial sex transactions for his benefit. The victim testimony was corroborated by other testimony from three other witnesses who were in the room at the time of the trafficking and testified that Miller abused the victims, instructed them to post ads and go on dates, and kept the money from those dates.
So if I could, if I understand Mr. Bugney's argument though, when those dates showed up at the efficiency apartment, everybody else has to clear out. Off they go into the hall. There's activity of people around the building. And if somebody's really posted in the building and they never notice these bursts of activity when somebody's going out there, maybe there were no bursts of activity. Maybe there was nothing going on in the apartment that the women were unhappy about. I mean, maybe they were lying, maybe they were telling the truth, but the jury never hears evidence to suggest that they were lying.
Your Honor, this goes to the issue of favorability. The active investigation of Mertz, which I'm going to define as the beginning when the officers met Mertz through when Breitsky left Miller's apartment, They paid 5 visits to Greenway Cross, the longest of which appeared to be 90 minutes long. The notes do not indicate that the officers ever visited the building's second floor, much less stop at Miller's apartment until after Bretsky left, and that's when Mertz stopped by Miller's apartment to drop off the keys to his storage locker.
Do we know that if people were leaving the second floor, you would be able to see it on the first floor? Do we have a floor plan for the building?
We don't know that, Your Honor. I believe the floor plan indicates that you wouldn't be able to see what's going on in Miller's second floor apartment from the first floor. There's no indication that the officers ever went to the second floor. In any event,
I thought they went one time. I thought they did go to his studio one time.
That's correct, Your Honor. On June the 30th, Officer Mertz went to Miller's apartment to drop off his storage locker key. This was after Bretsky had departed the apartment, and Mertz never stepped into the apartment. He just basically Miller opened the door, and he just gave Miller the key and left. But the whole notion that officers could have and should have witnessed individuals leaving the apartments during the commercial sex transactions is pure speculation. Bretsky never testified as to when she went on these dates during the times that Mertz and the other officers visited Greenway Cross. And Mertz in his notes only indicated once when he visited Greenway Cross. So there's nothing to say that he could have or should have witnessed these individuals leaving Miller's apartment. And to the extent that Miller is arguing that individuals walking into the building would constitute indicia of sex trafficking, there's absolutely no evidence, that no real reason to believe that the act of walking into a commercial building would alert officers to the presence of sex trafficking.
Can I move ahead to your it was available anyway argument? Because I'm very disturbed. You know, if the government tells somebody this investigation is about something unrelated to the one that you're involved with, your position seems to be that people have to assume that the government is lying and pursue it anyway, just in case the government's dissembling, which hopefully is not the background assumption that we have for the behavior of the U.S. attorney's offices. So that's what happened here. They asked, they got, you know, kind of a, hey, it's not about your case. And so they trusted you and they dropped it. So it seems to me troubling to think that you're shaving that close to the border, if not outright dissembling.
Your Honor, the government wasn't trying to hide the ball here. This is not like the Cam case. The government informed Miller that Officer Mertz was the undercover officer who was taking this parallel undercover investigation. They informed them 2 weeks before trial.
You didn't call it a parallel investigation. You told them, I don't have the language of the email right memorized, but you basically told them that it was related to another case, and there are no reports to turn over. And so another case means a different case. I don't know what else it could mean. And so I think there's a candor issue here.
Your Honor, the government basically in that email told Miller basically what, you know, supported their theory of the case.
The email said the undercover work was related to another case and there are no reports to turn over. Okay, maybe there were no reports because nobody wrote anything down. I don't know, but it's not the kind of response that would make you think that you then needed to file a bunch of extra discovery requests yourself. They've been told that this wasn't this case.
Well, they were told that Mertz did not write any reports because he did not discover any evidence of criminal activity. And that's
exactly
what
you never called it a parallel investigation. You never called it, you know, an alternative way to pursue whatever it was that Miller was up to in this efficiency unit. You gave them the impression, as Judge Barrett suggested a few minutes ago, maybe it was a drug case, maybe there were other people in the same building. you know, it's nothing to say only one unit in the building could have a problem, of course.
Your Honor, Detective Roloff represented that it was a separate investigation. The record does not indicate
what the purpose of— And what does the word separate mean to you? Separate, different person, separate, different offense, separate something else?
Separate, to me, indicates that it involves an investigation into a different form of criminal activity. There's nothing in the record to indicate what the purpose of this investigation was. In any event, it doesn't have any effect on the outcome of this case because it doesn't change the evidence, which is that Mertz and the other officers visited Greenway Cross 5 times during the active investigation and did not see any evidence of sex trafficking because they had little or no opportunity to witness evidence of sex trafficking. I think it's important to emphasize that this investigation occurred over 2 months after Daniels left the apartment and overlapped with Bretzky's stay in the apartment approximately 3 weeks. And as I mentioned before, the officers never went to the second floor except for one time in which Mertz dropped off the key to the storage locker. Therefore, there's nothing particularly significant about the fact that they did not witness any indicia of sex trafficking. And I'd like to point out that Miller conceded that there was commercial sex trafficking going on, that Daniels and Bretzky were acting as prostitutes. And the only issue here is whether Miller coerced Daniels or Bretzky into engaging in commercial sex transactions. And nothing that Mertz or the other officers saw addressed this particular issue. Moreover, none of the evidence in Mertz's notes or audio recordings implicated, much less undermined the witness's testimony. This is a much different case than the Walter case, in which the alleged Brady evidence directly implicated the credibility of one of the government's key witnesses. Right here, you have none of the officers ever met any of the individuals, either victim or any of the other individuals who testified as to the sex trafficking going on. Never met them while the sex trafficking was going on. So they really, you know, what they saw or didn't see has no bearing on, you know, whether the sex trafficking actually took place. And I guess sort of going back to your suppression point, Judge Wood, you know, I don't think it's necessary for the court to address this issue. I think the government's case on both the favorability and materiality factors is so strong. So if this court is somewhat troubled by that, I don't think the court needs to address that. I think that basically we have the 5 visits and these visits do not undermine the witness's testimony. They don't speak to whether Miller coerced Daniels or Bretzky into engaging in commercial sex transactions.
All right. Anything further? Or?
If the panel doesn't have any additional questions, I would just respectfully request that they affirm the judgment of the district court.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Bugney.
A few points. One, they're there 8 times looking for evidence of human trafficking before Bretzky is arrested.
Can I ask you, Mr. Bugney, why does it matter why they were there? I mean, it seems to me your basic point is we happen to know that there were more witnesses in this building. Even if they had been people opening up a new little business, maybe they would have seen a bunch of people leaving the apartment and a bunch of people going back in. So I'm not sure why the fact that they happen to be police officers, either for sex trafficking or for drug trafficking or anything else. What your main point seems to be is that they didn't see any evidence corroborating the theory of the sex trafficking.
That's a very big point, but it's also that they're trained police officers looking for the evidence of human trafficking. They're there at Roloff's behest. Roloff directs them in there, and he's in the midst of a human trafficking investigation. So the idea that they don't go up to the second floor just because the notes don't speak of it doesn't mean that they didn't do it or that we don't have the right to actually have an evidentiary hearing to examine what they did do. That's the problem with this. Why are they there? If they're not there to go and gather evidence, then why does Roloff launch this investigation? Roloff has launched this investigation. They're looking for evidence of human trafficking, and it borders on incompetence to not go up to the second floor or not say, let's figure out why are these people coming in or what substantiates this story? What did the surveillance video show? All of those are critical points. They gather surveillance video. I mean, that should be the best evidence there possibly is. And the defense doesn't even know about it. What did it show? We don't know that. And that's what a jury wants to know. The jury wants to know about the mosaic of evidence, the puzzle pieces that are put together. And they say, this is all that leads to a reasonable doubt. And that's the standard here, the reasonable probability of a different verdict. And all of that would go to whether or not these witnesses could be believed. By allowing this to be affirmed, it's really just sanctioning not only the misgivings and misdirection that we were exposed to, but it's also saying, yeah, you can just go and open it into a separate case file. You don't have to keep discovery the way that Rule 16 demands it. You know, defense attorneys, you don't even get your client's statements, and you don't get all the reports that are out there, and you don't get everything else that, that would bear on materiality. This case was far from a foregone conclusion. And this case should be remanded with the ability for us to actually present this evidence to a jury.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.